the drummer. I was the drummer originally, and I began singing. So now we have another guy playing the drums named Craig Bunch, and he's doing a very good job.
So you just switched the roles.
We have switched the roles because Captain Beefheart retired and needed a vocalist.
Unfortunately,
so I auditioned.
But he called you Drumbo. Is this the nickname for drummer, or what is it?
Drumbo is actually a stage name. There were several stage names that the band, everybody had a stage name during. Are you familiar with the album Trout Mask Replica? Well, Trout Mask Replica was probably the pinnacle album, the sort of the groundbreaking album.
Yeah,
that's
what I know, but I didn't listen to it really exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, during that period of time, he gave us all stage names because he had a stage name, Captain Beefheart. So he named one of the guitarists was named Zoot Horn Rollo. Another one was named Antennae Jimmy Siemens, and the bass player who is with us is Rocket Morton. Rocket, like Rocket, but with T-T-E.
Mm-hmm.
Rocket Morton.
Okay.
You can call me John.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. So how's the tour so far? You've been, I don't know, in France?
No, we haven't actually played in France. We started out in New York City, and then we went to Liverpool in the UK after a couple of days rehearsal because we live scattered in the U.S. We don't all live together in the same area, so we have to rehearse while we're on the road. So we played New York City cold with just a rehearsal in the hotel room to remind ourselves for a festival. Then we played Liverpool and another home first, and then we took the channel, and our first gig was in Aachen, Germany. So it was a long, kind of grueling journey, and it's been, you know, it's been quite extensive in the driving, so it's a very tiring tour. It's a little bit more taxing than most tours have been.
Where are you at the moment?
We're actually in Mulhouse, France. We're just on the outskirts of Mulhouse, France. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, it's quite
near
to Freiburg.
And I am sitting in the office of the promoter that booked this tour.
And on Friday, finally, in Freiburg, the town where I'm sitting at the moment, where our radio station
is
located.
Yeah.
So we're
looking forward to that. And I actually was pronouncing it correctly. Everybody said, no, it's Freiburg. And I said, no, it's Freiburg.
No. Frei is a German word for free. So Freiburg is also a...
Oh, it would work either way.
Is it your first time in Freiburg?
It is.
So I can't remember, but this has nothing to say.
There, the first time I played in Europe was in Hanover in 1968. And I haven't been back. I've never played in Germany since. Not by choice. I've been trying to get back over here since I started the reunion. See, I started the reunion of the Magic Band back in 2003. We did our first shows. And I've been trying to get to Europe all these years, to the mainland, you know, because Germany, France, you know, Holland, wherever. And we just couldn't find anybody who could arrange it. So Walter came along and thought he'd give us a try. So here we are.
Okay. So you have absolutely no idea if you have a real fan base in Germany? Because you have no experience.
No, but I'll tell you what, I was very surprised when we played Berlin at the turnout. It was fantastic night. It was a great night. So I haven't been disappointed at the turnout. I mean, you know, we play a lot of weeknights where people have to work. So because you can't just play on weekends when you're on tour. You have to play every night that you can, or you'd lose money. It'd be a really expensive vacation. So I was told at our first gig by the warm-up band that the Magic Band was not known at all in Germany. And it was a pretty good turnout for that night. But the following night when we played Berlin, I was just really happy to see so many people turn out. And I believe it was a Sunday night. So I was very pleased with that. And Berlin was, I think, the highlight for me so far. Oh, well, and so, you know, after Berlin, I was sure that some people must know us here. So every place we've played has been a good turnout. You know, we didn't pack the house, but definitely, you know, I asked the promoters, and they said, we did good. We did fine. So I think we do have enough of a following here to warrant coming back.
You spoke about this record, Trout Mask Replica.
Yeah.
It's quite old one. It's from 69.
69, correct.
Long time before I was born.
Probably, yeah.
Probably, yeah, that's for sure. Aren't you kind of reduced on that record? Because it's the most famous and as well as one of the most, well, one of the best records ever.
Well, people are familiar with all the albums. We play material from all the different albums. Trout Mask Replica, we do about five things, I think, from Trout Mask Replica. Most of them are instrumentals that we do without the vocals because the music is very, very difficult. And also, that's probably where my drumming style is mostly known from. So I play drums on many of those. But we also start out with one, with a vocal. It took 9 months to rehearse that album. Mm-hmm. It's a very complex album, and we were working 10 to 14 hours a day mm-hmm. to get it done. So mm-hmm. I think that's why it's a landmark album, because it just has so much stuffed into a double album. Yeah. I would say that it's probably got enough material that if you used all the little riffs that are in that album, you could have done 12 other albums, okay. You know?
Okay. So you can really hear the work that's in this album?
Yes.
This record was produced by Frank Zappa?
It was, yeah.
So he is at least a famous man known in the whole world?
Yeah.
Western world.
Well, he and Don Van Fleet, Captain Beefheart's real name is Don Van Fleet, as you may know, were friends in high school, you know, around 16, 17 years old. They were friends, and they both liked the blues. And Don started singing along with blues records, and that's how he became a singer. Frank was very interested in Don's ability to sing, and so they worked together and formed a group called the Soots when they were kids, S-O-O-T-S, which is the collection of stuff that gets in the fireplace chimneys. They call themselves the Soots. Mm-hmm. And but they wound up going their separate ways because you put two geniuses in a room together and there's bound to be a big explosion eventually. So they went their separate ways, but Don called Frank after one of his albums wasn't recorded properly and asked Frank if he could do an album with complete artistic freedom. And Frank said, yeah. Now, the album, the surprising thing is this is a double album, and most of the instrumental, most of the basic tracks were recorded in 4.5 hours in one session. And that's the other remarkable thing. We were so well rehearsed, we just went in and one song after another just laid them down. So it's very raw. Mm-hmm. You know, when you listen to it, it's very raw sounding. But it's also very complex. And a lot of people, when they first hear it, just think it sounds terrible. And they listen back to it again, they realize, well, there's a lot going on here. Like Matt Groening, who is the creator of The Simpsons. Are you familiar with him? he's a big fan of the Magic Band,
mm-hmm.
and Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. And he, when he first heard Troutmaster Replica, he thought to himself, "This sounds terrible." And then he already spent the $4 to buy it, so he listened to it again. And he said, "Hmm, it sounds terrible, but they meant it to sound terrible."
Okay, and then it's brilliant.
Yeah, and then he decided it was the best thing that he'd ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, it's a compliment if you have to listen to an album several times to really.
Yeah, because there are several. It's like an onion. There's several layers to it,
mm-hmm.
and you have to really get into it to understand what's going on. You should listen to it.
I will do.
Yeah,
I swear. I promise. You know for sure this funny picture of Barack Obama showing this record in the cameras.
That's a
how
joke.
Does it?
Somebody did that with Photoshop.
Oh, and you're not friend of Obama.
No, not at all. Sorry about that.
But anyway, do you pursue the election campaign at the moment in America?
I try to avoid talking about politics because it's just such a touchy subject
okay.
with so many people.
So you're interested, but you don't speak about it.
I am interested, and I do listen and read to make my decisions because, you know, if you're going to vote, you need to know what you're voting about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't endorse a candidate publicly or talk about that at all.
Okay. So let's come back to the music again.
Okay.
I read about you or about Beefheart that you always avoided to become mainstream, or that's something you never wanted to become. What
I
was
wanted
wrong
to be
with
mainstream.
Mainstream.
He didn't want to be mainstream.
Okay, so it was his opinion, only his
it
opinion?
It was his choice, and I think he hurt himself so badly financially because he went so far out that people couldn't understand him. And the mainstream, he missed the mainstream, and he had, aside from being a creative genius, and he was a constant flow. He was constantly, there's a term we use in the States called ADHS, attention deficit hyperactivity syndrome, and it basically means that you can't keep your attention focused on one thing very long.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like that. I mean, you would be trying to rehearse, and he would write three songs during the rehearsal. He was constantly coming up with new things, and he wouldn't want to rehearse. He'd want to do something new constantly. I said, but you need to rehearse because we're going on the road. You've got to know this material. And so he was he wouldn't rehearse with the band. And when he went on the road, it was very difficult because you couldn't, you know, he would throw the band off sometimes. So I started telling the guys, because I was the musical director, I'd say, don't follow him. Just play what I showed you to play. Don't try to follow him because everybody will be lost, you know. He was copping out. You know, if he went mainstream, he was copping out. He was afraid that he'd be labeled as a commercial cop-out, just
mm-hmm.
another product, and he didn't
mm-hmm.
want to be that. And I can understand that, but the thing is, what he could have done and what he did do very well was he sang the blues so brilliantly, and he played harmonica so well, and he used to sit around and sing the blues to pass the time with his buddies. He'd sit around and sing the blues, and, you know, Elliot Ingber, who was one of the guitarists in the band, would sit with him, and they'd go through blues song after blues song after blues song. And I said, Don, why don't you record this stuff? Because if you recorded this, and you did three or four albums of that, you'd become famous as a blues singer, and you would have enough money to do all the avant-garde albums you wanted to. All the more experimental music, and you would have the money to do it. And he just would, you know, he wouldn't listen to me.
Would you say that Frank Zappa, for example, was mainstream? I would say so.
Frank Zappa mainstream?
At least
everybody
knows him. That's for me mainstream.
His music wasn't really mainstream, but he appealed to people in the sense that, you know, I haven't heard a lot of Frank Zappa music, but he appealed to people because of his sense of humor, for one thing, and on the other side, because of his brilliant compositional skills. And you put those two things together, along with his studies of sociological behavior and just all the different lifestyles. You know, he used to listen to people talking, and he'd record their conversations and just study them and study how people were. He was fascinated with people. So, but he was a totally different kind of person than Don. And Don was a little, he was competitive, highly competitive, and he was very jealous of Frank. So when Frank started becoming famous because of being a little far out in Don's eyes, Don decided to be farther out, and he went to an extreme, being far out. And when you hear Troutmas Replica, you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think that was his downfall, in a sense, is that he tried to go too far too fast, and not enough people could keep up with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he would have evolved more slowly, it might have worked. But it was like a plant that grew up too fast and just shot through the roof, and the building collapsed around it. You know.
Now, unfortunately, he's gone. 2010. But you go on working.
Yeah, he retired from the music business in 1982, I believe,
mm-hmm.
And became a famous artist. You can look up his work. You know, he's got paintings, you know, paintings and galleries all over the place. And yes, then he became very ill with multiple sclerosis, MS.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
when he contacted that, he started, and I think he had the early stages of it, because I saw him do some very awkward things, and I thought, there's something wrong here. And later on, you know, I heard, it was never really officially announced until after his death in 2010, but I believe that he had shown the signs of it even back when I had last worked with him in 1980.
Mm-hmm. Today, your music today, you're still doing music, you're going on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Do younger people still discover your music, or is it something just for this fan base from the 60s and 70s? What do you think? What do you see in the public?
Well, what I see is... what I see is more of a mixed crowd. I was more surprised this time out than ever before that I saw a lot of younger people, people who some weren't even born at the time. You know, I would estimate that they weren't even born at the time the stuff came out. Maybe their parents played it and they were interested because of their parents, or maybe they heard from friends or in college or whatever. But I see a lot more younger people, and they surprisingly sing along with the stuff and know it quite well. So there seems to be a younger group also that are followers now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that's great, because it's the thing about this music, and when you hear it, I think you'll hear this. When you hear it, it really doesn't sound like something from the 70s or the 60s. It sounds timeless.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unique and set apart from anything that's there. And that's the one thing about the music. You can't really put a label on it. You can say, oh, listen, they used this effect, or they used that effect, or they did this or that. It's very, very basic, raw music, but it doesn't really fit the time era or any time era.
Timeless music is maybe the reason why you're part of the music history now, and
mm-hmm.
will always be. So people like me or younger people, it's like with the Beatles, for example. So you will always listen to the Beatles
mm-hmm.
in 100 years. So.
Right, yeah. Well, it was very pleasant to speak with you, Eva.
Yeah, thank you. It was an honor for me. And
thank you.
I hope you have fun and a full house on Friday in Freiburg.
Me too.
Thank you so much.
Freiburg here will come. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.